change is going to happen at work. It's just going to happen where we will have to work with others that we have never worked with before. Now, this could be as simple or as small as a reorg. I say simple and small as like that's ever a thing with reorgs. Could be a new boss, or it could be something at a huge scale like mergers and acquisitions. But at the root of it all, there are commonalities across the board in how we show up, engage, prepare, and prioritize. Changes like these can be extremely damaging to employee morale and the cultures of all groups affected if we do it incorrectly. As quoted by Harvard Business Review, 70 to 80% of mergers and acquisitions fail. Most of the reasons why they fail is around integrating the two parties involved and how they go about doing it. But that's where us as leaders are truly tested. My guest today has been through a few mergers, and not all successful. She's got a lot of lessons learned. And now she helps executives do better and be better with changes like these. And she's going to give us some insight today. Hold on. Welcome back to Relationships at Work, the leadership mindset guide to creating a workplace we love. I'm your host, Russell Lolliker, a communications and leadership nerd with a couple of decades of experience in both of those areas and a whole heap of curiosity on how we can make the workplace a better place. If you're a leader trying to understand and improve your impact on work culture and the employee experience, well, you're in the right place. A place that I strongly recommend you taking some time with is our YouTube channel. Everyone learns differently. Everybody does. Some audio, some visual, some text. Well, we got you covered through all of them. Our YouTube channel, which launched earlier in 2023, oh my goodness, is it 2024 already? It includes not only conversations with some of your favorite and brilliant guests from the show, from the world of leadership, workplace culture, and employee experience, but also some quick bites as I've started adding YouTube shorts as well. Those are YouTube's version of TikToks, just really quick little great takeaways. And there are some huge takeaways that I'm extremely excited to share from our latest guest. She's been through a few mergers and acquisitions, and she's seen it just not work. And as I was talking to her through her advice and experience, I couldn't help but be excited to share how relevant this is for any leader having to navigate through any level of change. Reorgs definitely came to mind. Staff can feel so helpless, undervalued, and minimized through a process like this. And it could all be addressed if we as leaders were just more intentional with transparency, compassion, communication. We need to be leaders. We need to help leaders be that for our teams and for the health of our organization. Whether, like I said, it's a reorg or something as big as a merger or acquisition of two companies coming together. Jennifer has been through it, and she knows how to do it better for everyone's mental health and the health of our organizations. Over to her. And on the show today, we have Jennifer Fondrevet, and here is why she is awesome. She is a global speaker. She is an M&A integration consultant and transition specialist through her consultancy Day One Ready, helping anyone from Fortune 500 to startups and small businesses navigate change. She's also a best-selling author with a satirical business book, Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Mergers and Acquisitions, a playbook for preparing, navigating, and leading people through challenges during mergers and acquisitions. I don't know if you've sensed a theme here, but mergers and acquisitions are what we're going to get into today. Hello to you, Jennifer.
Hello. I got to say, that is the fastest introduction of me I've ever heard, yet it was all audible. Like, you should do those legal speak on all those pharma ads where you can't understand anything other than when they say constipation may follow. So I'm just really impressed.
I love that you're giving me dreams to aspire to. Thank you for that, Jennifer. I appreciate it.
Me too.
So let's get right into it, Jennifer, with the first question I ask all of my guests, which is, what's your best or worst employee experience?
Well, the irony of that question is my worst employee experience immediately followed my best employee experience. So I'll start with the best. I worked Well, I'll back up one sec, but for those listening, don't worry, I'm not going to tell you my life story. I went to Thunderbird Graduate School, an international business school, because I wanted to be ambassador to France. This was my life's goal. I went into advertising instead. So my dad just thinks I'm taking a circuitous path to ambassadorship. In that time of advertising, I then moved into marketing and I joined a company called Navtech, and I moved abroad to Paris, France, to be the global B2B marketing director for Navigation Technologies, Navtech, which is digital maps. So now everybody who has a phone and uses a map, they're ubiquitous, right? But try and think back for anybody who can, what you did before you had that map on your phone. Now they're everywhere, and it was an exciting time to be a part of that company. I'm half French. I was able to use my French, but also just doing the go-to-market strategies for that. It was an amazing employee experience. I worked with really sharp and smart people who made me just be better every day, and I had a super team. And then living in Paris, France, that was followed by an acquisition. Nokia acquired us. And for about, 18 months, it was okay. I think largely, I know looking back, it's because they didn't know what to do with us. Well, that's not fair. Actually, they essentially just had acquired Navtech because they wanted to maintain the price on our digital maps. I thought it was going to be a great opportunity for Navtech and Nokia to work together. And so when it started to fall apart and not be the case, that employee experienced, I would say, evolved from my best experience to my worst experience, because it felt like overnight I was devalued as an employee when I had been enormously valued prior while working at Navtech. So it was a shift that I was unprepared for, and it's what led me to write my book.
So out of curiosity, just to dig into that a little bit more, and of course, we're not here to throw specifics under the bus, but is there any examples that you would give, like, this is what it felt like to be valued versus the juxtaposition of that?
Yeah, and you make a fair point. So this is, and I intentionally, even in my book, right, this is not about Nokia specifically and Navtech. I'm just talking about my journey and that experience. But 70, 90% of M&A fail. There's a pattern. There's consistently things that happen. So it wasn't specific to Nokia. It is what happens predominantly in multi-billion dollar acquisitions. And the challenge that I see and what I wrote about is we were a B2B company. We were very good. Navtech sold maps to enterprise, so think FedEx and UPS. We sold it to governments. We sold it to phone companies and telecommunications, right? Nokia, Samsung. We sold it to automotive companies. So all of that was a big part of the role that I played, helping my sales people sell to their clients. But we were acquired by a B2C company that was just, you know, their energy, their entire focus was selling to consumers. And so they didn't get our B2B approach. And we spent a lot of time trying to help them understand how we sold into our customers and why, and the importance of our events, the trade shows, et cetera. So it's the traditional pain point that has been written about even before I wrote about it, is culture clashes, right? How culture, the difference in culture, and how not paying attention to that up front, how that can undermine the success of your integration.
So let's take a step back for just a moment from a groundwork perspective. I've always found it's really, really helpful on this show and talking to people like yourself to define what we're even talking about before we get into more of the conversation. So when we see, say, M&N, when we say mergers and acquisitions, what are we actually talking about?
So, and I'm glad you started there, because I have had people say, I'm sorry, did you say S&M? And I said, no, M&A.
Different show, podcast.
You do wonder, what are all these acronyms? So mergers and acquisitions. And really, frankly, I'll be upfront. It's even if a company says we're merging with another, it's still an acquisition. There's always a dominant player. So mergers and acquisitions have been around since literally the late 1800s. I talk about this in my book as well. So it's not a new phenomenon. And essentially, it is the act of one company acquiring or being acquired by another company. And again, anybody who works in M&A also knows that even when you do a merger, there's still going to be a dominant player. And that's just that, you know, it's just the nature of business. And so with a merger and acquisition, you've seen a significant uptick, particularly in the last several decades, where you've got more companies, both multi-billion dollar deals happening, but also middle market companies. The pandemic forced a lot of companies into duress. And so they either had to partner with, merge with, or be acquired by other companies or acquire other companies to be able to be competitive in the market.
So what are the impacts? You've talked about alignment being a big one. When you've got one organization that's B2C, the other one's B2B, that's a pretty big differing of alignment. So I'm curious at it from a culture, which you've already touched on, is what does this actually look like that is the obvious and maybe less so obvious impacts by having two organizations come together like this?
Well, and actually on your theme of let's make sure we explain everything. So B2B, business to business, that's what Nokia was, right? We were working with other clients who then had a consumer end user. So we provided maps to all those entities I mentioned before, the different industries, enterprise, communications, automotive. And then B2C, which Nokia was direct consumer, business to consumer. And so philosophically, it's a different orientation, right? Because we were, as Navtech, our role was to help make our partners more competitive with their end user. Whereas Nokia was going straight to a consumer. And so it's a different orientation. So first and foremost, I'd say that mindset shift is different, right? Nokia didn't necessarily have a middle person. They were direct to the consumer. And so they thought a lot of our creative, our processes, you know, seemed to be too slow or ineffective when it was actually our marketing that helped a lot of our B2B partners be better. You know, for instance, we worked with automotive and showed them the value of having map data that worked well in people's navigation systems in their car, right? How that would make them even more happy with the car overall. So a BMW or a Ford, for instance, having an automotive or having a navigation experience where people said, wow, this was great. You know, all I had to do was plug in an address and I went from A to B. It made people think positively of the car. But that takes time, right? It takes research, it takes partnership, it takes all of that. And so while it can be longer and more complicated, it still can be quite effective. But that's just, that can be foreign to a company where their focus is B to C. So that's just one, you know, example of how culture can clash, and it takes time. That's what I talk about in my consulting, as well as, you know, the book that I wrote, is how to really understand the cultures of the two companies. But as you're getting into the deal mechanics, because that'll be critical in that post-deal integration.
So that leads me to the obvious next question is, how do you do that? And you said there's that dominant organization. There's always one that's kind of in the pole position more than the other. What should they be doing? And before I ask maybe what the acquired organization maybe needs to do as well to better have this merger or acquisition happen.
Well, there's a couple of things. The traditional model is the one I experience. And so I'm going to talk about the traditional model that I see and where I see that go wrong, and then what I do to address the challenges I saw. I think, unfortunately, too often it's approached from an efficiency standpoint, right? How do we integrate efficiently? It's just project management, right? People fit in boxes. What level are they? You do this, you do this. Okay, here's redundancy. Okay, we're going to get rid of these people. And I'm being I'm overgeneralizing, but that is often the approach. It's templatized, if you will. The downside of that approach is people don't fit into boxes neatly. Oftentimes, at least every work experience I've had, and I know I'm not the exception, people are more than their job description. They aren't the box that they tend to fit in, right? They will have a skill set that goes beyond just their job description. So if you're looking just for pure redundancies and you get rid of a department, you can lose people who are the glue for teams, who are influencers across a company, simply because you said, oh, we don't need that department. We don't need software developers because now we've got two groups of software developers. So I say that in the experience that I had, more often it was project management, it was templatized, and it was just all about efficiencies and redundancies. What I try and do is, one, shift people's mindset, help them understand that people are not boxes, that they bring more to that employee experience and teamwork than just the job description that they have. But I also work very hard to help leaders be better prepared for what happens to people in times of change and uncertainty. Because frankly, in business, you know, when you're on a rapid growth trajectory in particular, right, you set objectives, you define the strategies, and you execute. But with a merger and acquisition, you're going through a massive transformation as a company, even middle market and small businesses. A merger or an acquisition is a shift in process and systems. You need to allow people to adapt to that, but you also need to prepare your leaders for how to lead people when they're dealing with a whole new process potentially.
And it's always funny, and I found this during the pandemic as well, is through massive upheaval and massive change, we really understand who the leaders are or are not in those situations because they're being tested. And most people in leadership roles never in their entire careers get tested, much less to the level of a merger and acquisition or a pandemic level.
And I love that. I love that you brought that up, by the way, because I use the pandemic as a reference point all the time, right? I'll say, okay, let's just think about during the pandemic, the leaders who you followed and admired. What did they look like? How did they lead, right? They role modeled the behavior they expected of others. They acknowledged when they didn't have all the answers, and they demonstrated compassion and empathy. They met you where you were in your journey to try and help you move forward. That's the kind of leader you need in a merger and acquisition, but it's a unique leader. It's a new leadership model that not all leaders are used to. So I love that you brought up the pandemic because it's a great reference point for leadership, frankly, now that we need to have beyond the pandemic, because we're constantly facing uncertainty. That's the landscape.
And I think the one thing I would add to that is communication, 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 because so much is, and you know how this works, when there's no communication, people fill in the story themselves. They will write the best narrative, but 9 times out of 10, they'll write the worst one. And I can see it totally happening in a merger and acquisition going, I don't have a job, when you could be promoted next week. You have no idea because nothing's been communicated to you. Is that probably one of the key reasons a lot of these don't work? Because you're saying that 70 or 80% of most M&As don't become cohesive and easy.
It's one of many variables. Communication is critical. Thankful that you highlighted that, because it's I usually lead with that, but then everyone says, oh, it's always communication. But it's, to me, it's kind of like location, 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 right? It becomes white noise. It's like, well, yeah, but what you think is a good location may be different than what you think is a good location, right? Same with communication. Some people are visual. Communication, right, needs to be visual. Some people, you know, they think one town hall is going to answer it because they've communicated everything in that one town hall. But as you know, we absorb information so differently, each of us. So to me, a key part of what I work on with CEOs and their executives is that communication needs to go in all formats. It's a town hall. It's a webinar. It's a one-on-one, right? It's going to the locations. It's being available for Q&A and not sidelining, not saying, well, we'll talk about that later, or not having a prepared idea of what the questions are going to be. You don't have to have all the answers, but you need to acknowledge that these questions are out there. When your employees are asking questions, that's an opportunity for you to demonstrate. Again, let's use the pandemic as a reference point. How many leaders people admired when they said, listen, I don't know how we're going to address this. This is new landscape for me, but I'm confident if we work this together, we can be successful. And those are the leaders you saw be successful during the pandemic. And that is the same scenario that I say to leaders now. That communication needs to, exactly as you said, it needs to help people understand what you do know, what you don't know, and how they can contribute to solving those things you don't know.
When we think of mergers and acquisitions, we always seem to talk about the C-suite because those are the ones that are doing all the conversations and making the decisions, but they're not as impacted as everybody else in the org chart. And yet, that's what we seem like we talk about the most. So how do we get leaders, and I don't equal executive to leader, because it doesn't mean that it's not the same thing, but let's talk about that leadership buy-in, because they're the ones that are going to have to sell it to their employees. They're the ones that are actually going to have to go into the trenches and have those connections and relationships, not that CEO who has somebody else write their email and it goes out to everybody. So how do you get them on board? What is the connective tissue throughout the organization to get this easier?
Well, and it's funny. I feel like you've either read my book and all my articles or read my mind, because one of the first articles that I did after coming out with my book was exactly about that in Harvard Business Review. It was about the us versus them mentality that can happen. It's not just our company versus their company. It's executives versus frontline leaders, because your frontline leaders, they're the people who aren't in the room when the deal is made, but they're the ones burdened with the execution, and they're critical to your success. And so a significant part of the work that I do is to try and get those frontline leaders involved sooner where I can, particularly with forward thinking executives, to bring in frontline leaders during that due diligence for them to have line of sight on not only the vision for the merger or the acquisition, but the role that they can play in influencing the strategy once the deal is announced. That just helps accelerate not only the execution, but the buy-in. Because exactly as you said, these are the people who are not just leaders of teams, but they role model the behavior that the teams are looking for. Does Joe buy into this? Because if Joe does, I do. Right? But it helps a manager, a frontline leader in particular, have line of sight sooner on what that strategy and mission is. Because then they can see, okay, this is the role that I can play and my team can play. But they can also weigh in on the strategy so that the strategy reflects the reality. Right? Too often in deals that I've seen that don't succeed, it's because the strategy is at a 30,000 foot level and doesn't reflect the budget, the resources, and the time that's required in order for this to be successful in the time frame that a company thinks. And so the sooner you bring those frontline leaders into the fold, the greater chance for a realistic strategy and buy-in from teams.
But doesn't that just reinforce the fact that if you're trying to fix leadership and communication relationships when you're going through a merger, that you have already kind of set yourself up to fail by the time you get to that point? Because if leaders are good, if executives are good, they already have these communication streams in place. They already have the relationships. This should be not a surprise to them by the time it actually happens. if you're going, oh man, now I should start learning how to communicate in this, you've already, that's kind of a red flag.
Well, I guess I'm an optimist. You know, the way I look at it, and I say that because for me, a lot of this is low hanging fruit. And I'll share a story. It's one that I just think really captures what we mean when we say how critical communication is. So a woman who I interviewed for my book, she was a customer marketing manager. And her boss, after an acquisition, said, listen, I don't know if our team's going to be valued like we were before. I think we're valuable, right? So they did research on automotive, but they had been acquired by a telecommunications company. And so his advice to the whole team was, don't fixate on your title. You need to show quickly your skills and expertise and how that can help the company move forward. Demonstrate the value that you bring. Don't stay tied to what you did before, but demonstrate your skill set and look for every opportunity to do that. And she said that was invaluable to her because he didn't sugarcoat the situation. And so they did. They focused on showing how quickly they understand an industry and can draw conclusions that could help the company get smarter in a particular market segment. And for her and the entire team, the entire team was kept and retained because they demonstrated that. So for me, it's a great example of authentic communication that doesn't break confidentiality. He was very open and transparent, said, I don't know. Right. And, you know, you can use that information as you will, but let's try and solve this together and let's demonstrate how this team operates and what makes us so good.
Where is HR in all of this?
Well, the unfortunate part is that HR typically doesn't have a seat at the table during those deal discussions, and they're brought in at the 11th hour, essentially to highlight, okay, here are all the issues that we're going to have. Right. One of the, I think what's been lovely about the work that I do now, because my past life is a marketing executive, I've had so many HR people who I worked with in my past life go, I knew you were a closet HR person, because, you know, part of my role is to elevate the importance of your HR partners. Right. Don't just look at them as compensation, benefits and payroll. But how can their expertise contribute to how we think about this deal strategy? I think there's just an assumption. And you know, I have HR leaders who say they equally need to demonstrate the role that they can play, the value that they can bring. So it goes both ways. But for me, the importance, where I see CEOs recognizing the importance of having their HR leaders involved in the discussions early, helps them anticipate where they're going to have pain points, particularly as it relates to culture, those higher level things like culture, onboarding. You know, it's not just, again, as I said, it's not just the compensation, payroll, and benefits. Those are extremely important. And particularly from a legal standpoint, you want to make sure that those are all addressed. But there are bigger, higher level things like culture, mission, vision, you know, what drove the merger acquisition and why. An HR partner, a good HR partner, can help you think that through as a leadership team.
You mentioned culture, and I find that always a really important topic, because we say culture when there's no such thing as culture, but maybe 7,000 subcultures within an organization. So I'm kind of curious from a diversity standpoint, and I mean, whether we're talking generational, cultural, personal cultural, how do you approach this when your organization is a mosaic? It is not a homogeny.
Here's the greatest success I've had, because as you pointed out, right, everyone kind of defines culture differently. You know, it can be this amorphous, or, you know, it's how I feel when I show up at work. It's the atmosphere, the people I work with. And the exercise that I do with C-suite and frontline leaders is I'll say, if you want culture integration to be successful, think like a tourist. Think like a tourist going to Italy, right? So I use that as an example, right? If you really want to make the most, you have planned this wonderful vacation to Italy. but you don't speak Italian. You've never been to Italy. What might you do? You would research Italy. Maybe you'd read some books on Italy. You would talk to people who have been to Italy. Maybe you'd find people who were Italian. Find out what are the best places to go, right? But you have a curiosity mindset. You want to learn about the culture. You might even do, what's it, Duolingo. You might pick up a couple of key phrases. I said, so you have to have that same mindset. You want to be curious about the other company and their culture. And this goes both ways. What are acronyms? What's the glossary of terms? Who are people that used to work at this company that could maybe give me insight, right? Particularly, I'll say, as the deal is being announced or right before it, more often than not, people are aware of a deal when it's happening before it's done. And so you have the opportunity to find out more about that company. How do they think? How do they work? What's the terms that they use? If you think like a tourist and you come at it with a curiosity mindset, and oh, by the way, same thing with tourists, right? I talked about Paris, France. More often than not, when you go to Paris, France, because it has unfortunately a bad reputation for, you know, snarky waiters at French Parisian cafes, I'll say, but you usually, if you show that you are interested and you share a couple of terms, even if you slaughter the French, typically it shows that you made an effort. You wanted to understand the culture. Same thing goes with company culture. You need to think about it from a curiosity mindset standpoint.
Now, this reminds me of a story. You're going to make me tell a little story here, Jennifer. I backpacked through Europe, specifically in Paris. There was a couple ahead of me. This aligns a lot to what you're saying. We'll say they were American. Anyway, as a Canadian, it always makes sure I differentiate. As an American couple, they were getting very angry at a ticket agent. Over and over again going, why don't you speak English? I'm just trying to get the answers. Very them. The ticket agent, very politely, I do not speak English. Je ne parle pas français.
Je ne parle pas anglais.
Over and over again. And they were just, they stormed off because there was no interest in finding common ground or at least trying. So we see this and we're like, well, our French isn't that great. My best friend at the time had taken French up until a certain university, but it wasn't that good. But when we got up to there, he tried. He mangled French so badly, but he tried. And she responded in perfect English. You go down that way, you take a left, and go down this way.
But that is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, right? Exactly. How do you overcome us versus them? You know, now I'm half French, so I can speak. I have seen that scenario play out more than once, you know, where it's just, there's no effort made to try and meet people halfway. And the more you demonstrate a curiosity and an interest and a desire to learn about someone else's culture, the more they will give to you and also take back from you. And you have to have that same approach. And I say this, it's not just multi-billion, particularly in multi-billion, but I've seen it even, I'll use manufacturing. Or healthcare, right? We're seeing a lot of mergers and acquisitions in those two industries. Nurses and doctors, again, let's go to subcultures, right? Nurses have a culture, doctors have another culture. And I see it time and again where I'll say, if you aren't looking to see how you can learn from each other's cultures and you just stand on the side and go, well, you know, this is how we do it. How you do it is wrong or irrelevant or not important, you're never going to succeed. You aren't going to find those integration common ground points. And so for me, you've got to intentionally approach this from what can I learn and what can I teach? And whenever I say, do you need to think like, I should say, think like a good tourist, not a bad tourist. Mm-hmm. And you will be so rewarded.
So when employees feel undervalued, like you did for your merger, they will get not quiet. And so I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are when it bleeds into public discourse, because people will go on social media, Glassdoor, LinkedIn, talking about how these mergers and acquisitions are not working or are, but nobody goes generally on social media to rave about things. They usually want to go and talk you know, how horrible it's going. So how is that a factor or a discussion topic when it comes to leadership, trying to figure out how to keep everybody under a tent?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, only because I've had a number of CEOs hire me because they've seen that, right?
Yep.
And they'll say, how do we avoid that? What's fascinating, Russell, I suspect we have a common viewpoint on this. There are things that are obvious to us, those disconnects, the communication misses, because oftentimes leadership will get to a point where they don't see it. They don't see some of these things that we see that will be obvious, right? So the perfect example that you raised at the beginning, if you don't communicate consistently, you know, on an ongoing basis, even when you don't know the answers, people will fill in already early on. They'll fill in what they think is going to happen, and they typically go to the worst case scenario. And that's where they go to social media. Now, you can, you know, cross your arms and say, well, that's not fair. They didn't give us a chance. We already talked about that. Well, you talked about it, but you didn't talk about everything. So even being open about, hey, here's what we're working on. What are other questions you have? Solicit questions. What are things that we as a leadership team need to be working on and thinking about that are obstacles to you getting your job done? You don't want to be blindsided by that. And blindsided usually is because people walk, they leave, or they start posting on social media. So that's a key part of the work session that I do, is to prepare executive leadership and frontline leaders for here's how people react to news like a merger and acquisition, what drives those behaviors, and the preemptive things that you can do to de-risk the potential challenges that you will have that happen with mergers and acquisitions. You know, I've seen the patterns. I wrote a book because it wasn't just my experience, right? Multiple CEOs and C-suite executives as well, middle managers, HR leaders, private equity contributed to the research that I did. And so I know I've seen the patterns, and there are ways to preempt them, but you have to be intentional. You're painting the vision and then the communications that you do throughout.
I'm so glad you led me to vision, because that was my next question. Is we spend so much time as an organization focusing on vision and mission, regardless of effective or not effective, but it's certainly on a poster, but we talk about it all the time. So now you've got two organizations coming together with different visions and missions and values. I know we talked about culture, but this seems to be a little bit more aligned with how the C-suites may be looking at the future of the organization. How do you have that conversation?
Well, first and foremost, I have a session with the leadership from both sides, both companies. When working with a forward-looking CEO, those are the ones I love, because they'll say, okay, let's get our leadership together. I want us all to be speaking from the same book, because there is nothing that undermines success more than leadership talking in different ways, having different opinions, and having that exposed to your next frontline level leaders, right? It's very hard for them to buy into the strategy if you all don't look like you're aligned on the strategy. One of the ways I do that is a pre-mortem. And a pre-mortem, essentially, if you know the healthcare system, a post-mortem is the patient's dead, and we look back on what are all the ways that led to that, right? What could we have done better? Pre-mortem in a business context is let's scenario plan. Let's act as though, okay, there are things that could go wrong about this merger acquisition. What will those be? What are the... And this is everything. It's like a reverse SWOT, right? What are the opportunities and threats? What are our strengths and weaknesses? What are all the ways that we could have opportunities and challenges? And let's talk that out. And what I find fascinating is those conversations help leadership to see how each person thinks about the challenge or opportunity and how they might address it. And so getting alignment isn't just a couple of steak dinners where everyone feels good and they're saying, oh, we share the same values. This is going to be great. You need to get into the nitty gritty early as an executive team to really make sure you understand how each other thinks and that you share a common vision for why this merger acquisition was done and the opportunities it brings both companies, right? Because both companies need each other. That's the other thing that I highlight. Both of you needed each other. One may be acquiring another, but you're acquiring this other company because you couldn't do that on your own. And this accelerates your ability to do that. And so, you know, let's be humble in coming together. But for me, the pre-mortem exercise really helps get alignment at a nittier, grittier level. It doesn't mean you have to solution for everything, but even just understanding how people think about what the challenges and opportunities that might arise, having that dialogue helps you be better prepared and on the same page when executives are going out and talking to the organization.
I love the idea of speaking from the same or singing from the same songbook. It leads me back to that, the importance of definitions, because one organization might define leadership differently than another organization might. So you need to be able to understand what each of them are so you can come to a common language as much as
yes.
anything else. So yeah, I love that.
And that's one of the things I do with frontline leaders in particular is how can we co-create some new best practices? And low-hanging fruit is, and it's always a funny exercise, is when they share their acronyms with each other, and then they find out, oh my gosh, this is the same thing, we just describe it differently, right? So I'll say, okay, let's talk through. What's a way to help, you know, create a glossary so that people understand a widget here is a widget here, and you just describe it differently. But the more you find common ground, language is a great place. Again, I'll go back to my tourist thing, right? You know, what's one of the things that you always say? What's a swear word in French, right? What are the words, you know, what are the swear words? Or, oh, you say orange, we say orange. You know, it's just the accent. So it's there are ways to find common ground. So look for those early wins when working together as teams. Because then it just makes it so much easier to co-create best practices like go-to-market, the bigger, heavier lift.
Curiosity is so important. So I want to wrap up before we get into the last question. What does success look like for this, Jennifer? Like, what is successful a merger and acquisition when it comes to a culture coming together?
For me, I think the best way to answer that is the answer I give to CEOs when they say, okay, what's the one thing I need to think about or do as a CEO as I approach this merger or acquisition? And I always say, come to the union, come to this partnership with respect for the other side. When both partners, both leads of companies and executives of other companies come to that partnership with respect for the other side, it brings out the best in both companies. Think about the partnerships or marriages that you've seen that you really admire. Love is a foundation for sure, but more than anything, consistently, and I've had surveys, every audience I've ever asked this question of, it's respect. You see that each side respects the other. They can complement, they could be polar opposites, but when they show respect, you can see it's a solid partnership, and that's what you're striving for in a merger and acquisition is a solid partnership, that you value what that other company brings to this new strategy. And when you set that tone from the top, it allows people to see and feel valued for what they contribute.
I love how that brought us full circle to the beginning of your own experience of an M&A and not feeling valued. I've always felt the biggest way to retain employees is connecting the work they do to the value that it provides. And this feels like on a meta level, like on such a big
yes.
level, but still it has that granular importance. So thank you so much for that.
You bet. Listen, I started this journey because I thought I went through 3 multi-billion dollar acquisitions and I'd feel valued one day and devalued the next. And I realized that was me. Right? I was letting too much outside metrics, too many other things define my value. And so it's why a big focus of my TEDx talk, a lot of the talks that I do for individual groups is you've got to get clear on your value. Be clear on that. Don't let the outside metrics define it. The clearer you are on the value that you bring and what you contribute, then you can weather all manner of storms. Uncertainty doesn't bother you because you're clear on what you can bring and what you can offer.
And I love wrapping it up with the idea of agency, because as much as organizations and leaders have a responsibility to respect, to enter this with compassion and empathy, it's on us too of what we will or won't put up with. It's up to us on how we communicate for ourselves, how we champion for ourselves. So that doesn't get organizations off the hook, but we're also not passengers in this either.
Absolutely. So yeah,
thank you for highlighting that. So I'm going to wrap it up with the last question I also ask all of my guests, Jennifer, which is, what's one simple action people can do right now to improve their relationships at work?
Well, you know, our conversation led into this. I feel like, wow, we just transitioned so well, Russell. Let's do a TV. Because, you know, that whole knowing your value, the first step in that is focus on what you can control. We get so distracted by so many things that are out of our control. And if you focus on what you can control, and for me, the three things are my talent, my effort, and my attitude. Focus on that. Get crystal clear on what your key talent is. And as I said at the beginning, it's not always your job description or the diploma you got. But the clearer you get on your talent, the better off you are on again, knowing what your value is. And your effort and your attitude equally play a critical part. So that's the message I would leave. Focus on what you can control, your talent, effort, and attitude.
That is Jennifer Fondreve. She's a global speaker, M&A integration consultant, and best-selling author of a satirical business book, Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Mergers and Acquisitions. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. Again, I wish I could just have you introduce me everywhere.
And that is all. We are done. Another episode of Relationships at Work, the Leadership Mindset Guide to Creating a Workplace We Love. Thank you once again for listening. Love having you along the journey with me in this thing we call leadership and trying to understand how we impact others. If you've enjoyed the show, if you find some value in these episodes, whether it was this one or one of the many that come out every week, please feel free to share it. Just to one other person, whether it's in an email, a text, a conversation, if you think they'll find it of value or their community might find it of value, I ask that you encourage that sharing. Really appreciate it. It helps the show grow and it gets it to more ears and eyes. Thank you so much for being here and being so supportive. Take care.